alerted us. Put it here so we can hear everybody. A lot of the abductees, including the people that allegedly came before you in their books, have, Whitley Strieber, one that comes to mind, have these portents of doom and the world ending and all this going on in their in their experiences. And I was wondering how you dealt with that and how much stake you placed in it.
Well, first off, I never had anything consciously told to me or shown to me, as other people in my family have, and other groups of people have been shown the destruction of this and that. I haven't had that I'm consciously aware of. But what happened was I woke up on August 4th, 1989, with no memory of any event happening, but programmed to get the hell out of Dodge City as soon as possible. We were living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. The compulsion was very specific, extremely urgent, overwhelming. I had to make plans with my son, who was a graduate student in physics at the time. I made plans with him, the family, my husband worked in one place, I was in another teaching, where we could meet within 15 minutes at a certain point to get out. I loaded the car, the trunk, with every single item I could think of for starting over. We had this plan, and that's the only way I could even go to sleep at night, was knowing we've got a plan, we can get out of here, we got the potential. This pushed me so hard for 2 years, Greg, until I thought I was going to about lose it. We had to get out of the area, and it took 2 years to get the money and the ability to fulfill the rest of the picky requirements. It had to be at least 20 acres. I had to have my own water supply. I had to have my own fuel supply. I had to be in a very sparsely populated area. Do it. And we had no clue.
Is this what the moving to rural area thing is? All those
exactly.
Other women, it's just about
exactly.
The same kind of thing?
When I got there, of course, I ran into probably 30 different abductees from around the country who were programmed and compelled to get out of New York, Oregon, Arizona, Iowa, to Arkansas. I haven't a clue why. I know it was not my own general inclination to do this. I never wanted to live in the woods. I'm a girl. I don't like the bugs, I don't like the crap. This was not something I just suddenly woke up and said, oh, I need to do this. It was, you need to do this now. And until I moved into the house we built on the 23 acres, this did not go away. The minute I didn't even pack my trunk until we moved in, it's gone. Now, that's how I personally was treated by this phenomenon. I have not a clue that had to do with destruction. I don't buy for a minute. And if you read taken the chapter about when I was told about the Jacob and Esau scenario, you know, I'm a high skeptic anyway, and then I'm told this is a manipulation, and I don't know who it was telling me that they did not act like the aliens acted. The scenario did not feel like an alien scenario. I was given a very different treatment than I've ever been given at the hands of aliens. I don't know who it was, but it was it made me very suspicious of, it made concern more. A sense I've had ever since I heard the term New Age is that there are people being taken for such a ride, being put on this spiritual sled to their own, I don't want to say destruction, but to their own delusion. So maybe it was a self-generated event, although when I was able to get up right in the middle of it and check my environment, get up to the bathroom, look around, when I admitted I laid back down, I mean, I hadn't even closed my eyes. Good. All right, I'm back in the chair. Let's resume.
You know what's funny is something that Richard told me along, about 4, 5, 6 months ago. He said that there was some, the people, you know, he supposedly knows some people, some leaked sources
right.
In the government. Is that one of the reasons why you talk to him a lot? Do you get any contributions?
No, I knew him before that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. We met because he was assigned to review my first book.
Oh, okay. Well, the thing I was going to mention about him saying was about 5 or 6 months ago was that he said, I don't know if he was trying to scare me or what. He's usually very straight with me. In fact, I think he is always straight with me. But he said the technology is available for somebody to park a truck out on the street and let you see whatever let them see, let you see whatever they want you to see without coming into your house. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, for some reason, every time you come up with one of these virtual reality scenarios or anything like that, that's the first thing I think of. It's bad that I have to, I think he's channeled that way right now. It will probably change in another few months or years.
Well, if
and you do that helicopter thing, I'd like,
right.
You heard a helicopter, and I said, well, why isn't it somebody is hovering over the house and doing this?
And nobody else
is
hearing it in the house.
Yeah.
Well, if it was very human, I mean, this is obviously virtual reality targeting.
Uh-huh.
It's not a real helicopter. Ted and Marie would have heard it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But to posit, which a lot of people have tried to push me and others toward, that this is totally a human mind control, a nefarious scenario, cannot be supported by the evidence I've personally seen. I think there is so much in their hands of playing catch up with the alien technology and ability, and a way to get a handle on what we're having done to us is to imitate, to learn from, you know, their technology. But I'm confident of cases going back to 1905. We didn't have this technology then. I'm sorry.
Right.
My husband's first abduction in 1947, Labor Day of 47. I'm truly doubtful we had the capability.
The one when he was playing with his friends?
No, that was when he was 12 years old. In 1947,
okay.
He was 11 months old. He and his father had an abduction in the Sierra foothills. His dad was frozen at the wheel, and he was taking.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I remember reading that one.
I really don't think we had the sophisticated technology. Today, God knows what they're doing. But I know the history of this scenario is longer than our history of this technology. So I'm not convinced.
Okay.
Do you think it goes back further through history? Do you like Blaise ideas that, you know, it's similar to the fairy lore?
Well, we're talking really hypothetically now. I mean, as long as you realize I'm just playing with ideas and then not going on the evidence, because these things lie. That's something I'm really sure of, is they lie like dogs. And they say they own us, you know. Have you ever read The Way of the Shaman? Do you remember early on the man talking about when he went down to South America to study with one of the best of the shaman teachers, and he had taken the really dangerous psychedelic that you could die or whatever, and he sees these great reptoid things coming in from space, and they claim this is theirs, and they own it, and, you know, we're there. And he goes back to the shaman and tells him what they said, and the shaman laughs and says, oh, yeah, they lie like dogs.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I'm working on the new issue of my magazine that I do, and a friend of mine did an article using that exact sequence there and comparing it to the reptoids that are experiencing the UFO.
I think they may well have been messing with us for a long time, but I'll tell you just very simply, and it may save you a lot of other questions, Greg. People say, what's your general take on what's going on? And it's personal. It is based on evidence, but it's not enough evidence for me to make a solid case in any one particular area. So what makes the most sense to me, given what I know and what I've been through and what I've seen other people do, is the scenario in general that we are, and again, maybe it's more Keelish than Valet-ish, we are a highly valued resource that is husbanded as the farmer husbands the dairy cow. And it would explain so much about why it's transgenerational and the effects, why the genetic work is done. Our farmers will upgrade the stock to make the perfect breed of cattle as long as they can. Give a farmer a choice between taking a sick kid to the doctor and a sick cow to the vet. That cow's getting to the vet, you know? And those cows may well, if they were thinking, say, God, that farmer's so wonderful to us. He takes such good care of us, and I've had this miraculous healing, and I'm so protected, and he loves me so much.
Until harvest time.
Right. And you don't invade cows. You know, they haven't invaded, they must have been able. You don't invade cows, you use them. That's
right.
A different thing.
Yeah.
And you also, part of what they may have done to us in the past, assuming this hypothesis that they've been messing with the breed for a long time, is...
If you read Sitchin or
Gods
Sitchin, of Eden...
Sitchin's a whole other thing, man. The guy has so, according to anybody in his field in academia, the guy makes up his interpretations of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
But they're not
verified. There's another one that's much closer to what you're saying.
Gods of Eden.
Right.
And the only problem I had with his book was that he needed a real good editor. His logic leaps were he could fall in and break a leg. But, you know, other than that...
I'll get back up.
Yeah. But... if they have been genetically working with us for a long time, if I were them, now this is, you know, anthropocentric, so surely they're...
Yeah.
I would have genetically brought the stock the cows up to a point of intelligence where they could pretty much run the farm for themselves, so all I had to come in and do was periodic harvesting.
Mm-hmm.
And the theory that I'm hoping we get evidence to help support is that they did this, upgraded the intelligence level of the herd to be self-maintaining, and that it's proving to be a double-edged sword,
right?
Because once you kick it into gear, the old butterfly effect, it keeps going, and we're developing still more perceptive abilities and intelligence to the point where we're beginning to see what they're doing to us, how they're doing it, and through their illusions to where the cows are going to get so uppity, they ain't going to do it anymore. And so they've started something that they thought was for their benefit that may turn around to be what ultimately we use.
That's funny. In learning this stuff and discussing it like you do and putting out books on it, some people are learning to think in a different way. See, when I come and talk to you, I don't know, maybe if I was somebody else, I would try and get some kind of concrete opinion out of you or a position or...
But I don't have one.
Yeah, and you don't have one.
And
yeah, exactly. Because my wife is like, you never tell me that you have an opinion on it. Why don't you have an opinion? It's like, because I don't. If I have an opinion, I won't listen anymore. And that's I don't know very many people like that at all.
Well, I'm so afraid of being taken.
But this is causing people to think like that.
I'm so afraid of everything in my life. Not afraid. I don't want to think. But I'm so reluctant to be taken in by a false thing that I will reject what may well be the truth as long as possible till the proof is irrevocable. I don't want to. I mean, even when I pray, I don't say, God, help me. I say, if there's a God of truth and love, that's the one I'm talking to. I don't want the rest of you guys. And I'm saying if. So you're talking to probably the most skeptical person who's been through this stuff. And I'd give anything if I had something concrete I could stand on and hold on to. I would. But it's got to be right or I don't want it.
I think that we're not going to have anything concrete.
Well, they designed it where we have so little. And the rules always change. You get a handle on this, and immediately they change where the handle is.
It's quite amazing.
And they're certainly not studying us to learn about the race. They know us better than we know ourselves. They can manipulate us far better than we can each other.
Which is scary.
And I think crossbreeding is one of the big illusion scams they're pulling on us. I really do.
Something like you said, something true is here, something true is here. Just think you have a handle, and in between you have this hammock of junk that's going to evaporate.
What a wonderful propaganda tool to make us think we share offspring. And they're doing it to save us on top of that. Of course, they tell other people they're doing it to save them, but...
So they truly are space brothers.
Yeah, right. We must have some commonality. We can breathe. Yeah, right. Yet when I see the hybrid nursery down here and not the illusion possibility that we get over and over, I think they run some movies. They've got some favorite movies they run for almost everybody on the virtual reality scale.
Uh-huh.
And that puts out a consistent, Hopkins is one of the worst. As much as I admire, and I do admire him, he's one of the worst to say, I throw out the anomalous details, so I've got 20, 30, 200 cases of it, I'm not going to pay attention. Well, sure, they're running the same damn movie over and over. You get these, and then we know what it is, we've had it 200 times. The truth, to me, more likely is going to lie in the anomalous detail.
Right.
So we come at this from a whole different approach, and he's been very, very reluctant to pay much attention to anything I've had to say, and I have paid a lot of attention to what he's had to say. I've learned a lot. But I wish it could be reciprocal.
Well, it's a stepping stone.
Yeah, and
it's very well you and people you know, maybe.
Well, maybe, but I know that he has done enormous work, and we couldn't be doing a lot of what any of us would do if it wasn't for that.
Exactly.
I just wish you could see the logic I'm talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I get through one of these.
You know why? Because it's a logic of illogic, almost. It's a logic of leaving logic behind. To very non-linear way of thinking about it. And even though he's an artist, which I find it hard that he thinks in the way he does. He's a non-representational artist.
This is what blows my mind, too. This would have jumped out at the guy right off.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, they're all telling the same story because they all want to see the same movie.
Right, they just tell you anything about who made the movie.
Right. Directed it.
And we know movies, you guys come from an area where movies ain't reality, right? Okay.
Okay, has anybody criticized you for telling because I know about your experiences and bringing in things that they don't think are relevant? I mean, this is a rhetorical question, but it's something I want to hear your opinion on.
No,
like what Hopkins would say, these things happen, but we don't want to tell you about it because we don't want to contaminate the data.
Yeah, Bud has said that about his own stuff, but he's never said to me, don't tell people this stuff. He chooses to be paternalistic and protective towards the Dusties and toward the audience, and he has explained, I think, in public that he's trying to reach a mainstream group, and you don't give them everything at once because they'd run off and wouldn't listen, so you feed them a little at a time. Well, that's just not my approach. I think people are adults and have a right to the facts. So, you know, we just come at a different philosophical take on it. But nobody has told me not to. Richard Boylan has said, in Lincoln I was told, and so please don't, you know, put this in like black and white necessarily in the paper, but I was giving a presentation and Boylan was there selling books and wasn't in the room. And something I said apparently triggered a memory in a woman in the audience, and suddenly she sort of moaned, screamed, got up and ran out of the room.
I've seen that in the Bud Hopkins.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it happens when people's memories suddenly flash, you're going to get a response. And she was embarrassed, so she didn't come back in. I went and talked to her later. It was nothing I had done or said. It was the triggering of a memory that she'd already had. Well, Boylan heard about this. He wasn't in the room. But he heard about this, and apparently I was told that he said I was a dangerous person, should not be allowed to speak in public. And that I had been that I had been describing mutilations, and that's what had terrified the woman and made her scream. Well, that's nothing even close to the truth, and that's the only person who I've heard specifically target me for any criticism. I'm sure there's been tons of it. I just haven't heard it. So no.
You explained this in the lecture, but I just wanted to encapsulate it for when I transcribe this. And you kind of answered in the book, too. Why do you use the term ETs and aliens when you say you can't take any experiences at face value? And my guess is it's just going to be...
It's a shorthand term, yeah. I could call them, you know, something else. But aliens, see, I'm an English teacher, and we get real stupidly picky on things like definitions. Mm-hmm. An alien means other. I don't have a better term than that. I could call them the others, but...
Yeah, the other term that people are playing with now is between abductee and experiencer. An experiencer to me just sounds so politically correct.
No, I use the term abductee because I'm an English teacher who understands the definition of words. Mm-hmm. We are abducted.
Yeah.
Sorry. Hendrix, we were experienced with Jimi Hendrix.
Everything is an experience.
With the aliens, okay? Yeah.
I'm an experiencer when I'm breathing.
Of course, that's the point. And, you know, I really think words are important. And he's wanting them to be important because he's scared shitless of the ETs. He doesn't want to piss them off. I think that's really the thing. With people who have to find themselves taking that kind of stand is they're afraid. I'm just not afraid anymore. I mean, I have told them a long time ago, don't bother threatening me. Don't bother threatening my child or my husband. I know we're all going to die. Hey, that's no threat.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I'm not afraid. If I could get my hands on him, I would do some things myself, but I'm not afraid.
Correct.
If I could, but see, you never get that chance. The minute they're there, you're under control and you think and feel the way they want you to. Oh, thank you.
There you go.
Thanks.
Right.
Thank you. No problem. Thanks, sir. Do you have Tabasco or salsa or something?
Tabasco?
That would be fine, sir.
Did you want to eat and not talk?
I can do either one. Please suit yourself.
Oh, okay.
They want to hear us chewing with...
We're sitting here, and we're at the UFO convention, MUFON, which is an American organization. There are foreign organizations that do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't hear of any abduction accounts, probably because, you know, who in the United States travels to other countries?
Oh, lots of people do. You're just not talking to them. Yeah. Do you know...
Are they similar, or...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you get some physical differences, and then you get some real identical things, and you get people like Michael Heseman who have the... to say only Americans have bad abductions by Greys or Reptoids. It's not true.
It's our culture.
No, it's Michael Heseman's little... Yeah, right. We're all paranoid. You know, it's like the guy who explained that Americans have guilt over what they did to the Native Americans.
Yeah.
You know, you can play with all this if you want to, but if you start looking at what really comes in firsthand, yes, it's going on in South Africa, it's going on in Russia, it's going on in France. Sure, South America, I mean, everywhere's got it.
Almost the same scenario?
In many cases, almost the same, if not the same, in some areas a whole lot worse. I mean, there's some stuff going on in South America that I just think, please don't let that happen up here. You know, I mean, really.
You know, it's funny, a lot of stuff's gone on in South America that's always been a little bit more intense. Even from the 50s, it's been a little more intense, if you want to call it that, than it's here.
But,
do you think that's a culturally specific thing, or a result of perception, or?
It may possibly be cultural bias. It may be communication. It may be that the people involved in ufology do their own kind of censoring, consciously or unconsciously, of what factor in. I don't know. I'm not on the inside, Greg, of any of ufology. I'm a member of nothing. I have no backers or endorsers. For the most part, the big names, the Fab Four and all the rest, pretty much either try to avoid me or ignore it. So I'm not a person I can tell you what's going on around the world, except through the people I have managed to have contact with who do know these people and tell me what's coming in.
Do you think that helps you or hinders you?
It's irrelevant to me. It's just a fact. I mean, if you're going to ask me global questions, I'm so limited in my ability to give you some hard...
Yeah, I'm pretty good. That's why I asked.
Yeah.
I reread Into the Fringe one more time before I came here, and I noticed there was that incident with your therapist, Dr. Riley, or whatever you called him in the book.
The stupid therapist?
Yeah.
He said, call me the stupid therapist.
When you said you called him back right before you did the book, and he said, well, I wouldn't have said that to you now, believe me. Did you ever find out why he said that? Because you leave it at that and go to the next chapter.
To get him to tell me why, actually. I said, why is that? What have you learned since then? He says, well, I was just so unprofessional. He would not go into that with me. And I even sent him not long after that, not because I endorse it, because I don't know anything about it except what they put out on the surface. I sent him the announcement about Treat. Said, you know, some of your people ostensibly must be paying some attention to this. They've got a whole thing that meets on it. Maybe you should educate yourself. But, there may well be he's done it. What he indicated without saying was that he has learned at that point enough to know he shouldn't have dismissed it out of hand. Farther than that, the guy, he's an academic. He wouldn't go any further. He's a young one wanting to get a career going. You know, he's not going to say anything. So, no, he never said, I've been abducted, or now I know it's true. He just said,
thinking he was rude.
The worst moment in my abductee life, however, was with that man when I called him back 6 months later.
How are you? Good, thanks.
And asked if I could meet him for coffee over at the university. And he said, I wanted to ask you why you were so certain 6 months ago when I taught you that there's no such thing as flying saucers or agreement. What do you know that makes you so certain? And we were having that conversation. But the worst moment I think I've ever felt was when I said, well, how are we supposed to, because you're not going to examine us psychologically. You say psychologically, but you won't touch us. What are we supposed to do about all these? And I showed him I had a couple of fresh puncture marks. What do we do about this stuff? We're not imagining this stuff. And he reached out, and my hand was, I was here, and he reached out. I wouldn't be telling people you have those marks. He said, they'll know you've been abusing yourself.
Oh, yeah, I remember you mentioned
that. And I think that was the lowest point emotionally I have felt in all of this.
That's interesting, because I had another question about this, and I hope it doesn't offend you, but...
No, it won't offend me. After that, God, I can take anything, I guess.
See, because after I read all these things, both Wes and I, people we know, do reading in other areas of anomalous experience, and one of them was that when I heard about all the marks and things like that, you know about the phenomenon of stigmata, where people of religious beliefs will take on the wounds of Christ. Have you ever dealt with that scenario in connection with marks on people's bodies like that?
I have tried to consider that as an explanation. The sheer weight of what I've been through, case after case, and the marks that I've examined, I was hoping that's what it was, say.
Yeah.
It's not. In my opinion, I can put that on my list of facts as far as I'm concerned, it's not stigmata. When I moved to Arkansas, I decided I wasn't going to have a doctor I couldn't be honest with. I lucked into finding a doctor who just happened to have had a family member who had a UFO sighting. And the doctor knew the relative was telling the truth. So she was open to explain my situation. I said, I want you to be able to document and examine in the future anything other than the bruises and punctures, which all they can say is, yeah, you got a puncture, yeah, you got a bruise. They can't tell you anything more than that. But from if any other anomalous marks in these turn up, I want them documented, and I want you to give me the best medical explanation you can. Uh-huh. And when she documented the 3-inch slice area where the skin had been sliced for 3 inches up in a flat, raised up, and I had gotten up at 3:15, because I'm one of the abductees who wake up at around 3 almost every night. I got him at 3:15 to go to the bathroom, and it wasn't there. Believe me, you see it. At 7 when I got up, it was there. And she documented this for me, and she said, I don't think anyone other than a completely psychotic person could have done this to themselves. It's like they took a razor and sliced it.
Yeah.
And the scar's still there. I mean...
Oh, it scarred up. Because a lot of times when you describe these things, you say they heal very quickly.
Well, they do. They normally heal very quickly. There's a few things that happen that aren't. I was down in Tampa in May for a conference down there. I was alone. I locked my hotel room at night. I was sound asleep. I woke up feeling nothing had happened. When I got up, I had, and I've got the photographs, so you may think Sigmund again, but I had three, which we call the clamp marks. They turn up all the time on almost everybody. 3 fingerprint bruises so deep here, followed by the thumb bruise around here, that they stayed for probably twice as long as most of my bruises do. I had a red circle impressed into my spine, center of my spine, and then a swath of these broken capillary passageway, purplish red under the skin across half my back. Now, maybe that was Sigmata, but I was having a perfectly normal and uneventful, as far as I was concerned, night. My door was locked. You
have
to
be careful myself how much to read into what I read, and you tell me, and impressing my beliefs on it, and saying, well, you can't see it, so it must be this, why don't you consider this thing? But I haven't experienced it, so... You know what's funny? When I started reading your book for about 3 or 4 days, I woke up continually all night. Just from reading the books.
And that's not a scary
book. About 3 o'clock.
The 3 o'clock is when most... And everybody has their own particular time.
That's what
like
cued my ear because...
Yeah.
That was cued my ear because you said that 3 o'clock, and I said that's exactly when I was waking up every night for about 3 or 4 nights. Well, it was when I was there by myself and my wife was somewhere else. Because when she's there, I don't ever wake up.
We can turn the tables and I can interview you. I've got some ideas of my own.
I can be as paranoid as the next person, I guess. After reading the books, it kind of disturbed me that I would, you know, I think I'm grown up and I don't have a sick. And then when I read the books, I lie there and I think, well, geez, what could happen?
We start looking at the past.
Yeah, I can read anything I want to and things that have happened in my life, and I don't remember anything weird happening in my life, except Wes, I told once I went in my kitchen, I found all the cabinet doors open. I'd been in there like 5 minutes before, and there was nobody else in the house. And the drawers were open. The top one was a little bit, the second one was this way, the third one was this way, like stairs.
The poltergeist definitely follows all, in this phenomenon, it's so bizarre. If you didn't have the UFO part, you'd obviously call it poltergeist, but it follows so frequently with the abduction.
And I've never seen a UFO in my entire life, that anything that I could say was. Every time I see something, I was like, it's a plane, and I can tell it's a plane. You've got a red light and a green light blinking.
Some at distance, some right over the head. And, as phenomenal as they are at the moment, I think they're probably irrelevant to what we're doing. I really do. I think they're targeted for the most part, although there are some random sightings that occur from time to time, but mostly it's targeting a person.
Most of it's theater.
I think it is. I think it's distraction to a great degree. We have never learned a single important fact from any analysis of any sighting or photograph. I mean, you know, it keeps us busy.
It sounds like a thrill ride.
It's like the president's office. It's entertainment and distraction.
It's like the old magician thing. If you look over here.
Exactly.
I don't know how to take this question, but have you or anyone you know ever been requested to explore something they thought had happened and nothing happened? That's completely prosaic.
Mm-hmm. Some cases have turned up. I normally don't do any hypnosis. I have, on occasion, in an emergency, insistent situation, done like a little scan thing for people. After I did that stuff with my husband, I was not, you know, it spooked me enough. But Barbara, who I always refer people to if they can reach her, has done, yeah, people have thought they had a dream that might have been something, and they wanted to look, they knew a situation, there wasn't anything there, yeah.
I was turning it around because every time you look at, we regressed them and this came out, and I'm thinking, about nothing.
Things have come out that were nothing. But other than my husband's initial memory of the 11-month-old abduction, which his parents confirmed, circumstantially. We have not looked at anything under hypnosis. Or anything has come out under hypnosis that we didn't already have partial conscious memory of. I can't say that's true to everybody, but I know Barbara has had people who wanted to look at things and turned out to be nothing.
A lot of people would have a problem with things recalled in dreams, and I know your reason for doing it, because, you know, if something may be a dream, in fact, it's a very nebulous area.
It's a virtual reality dream, that's like that for sure now. They still are contact.
Do you get any criticism for you as relying as much on what you call and the people you study call dreams?
Not that I hear, and it wouldn't change my mind anyway. These are not things that are hypothetical in my life. They're there. They're real. And I just cannot help it if it's not in somebody else's life and they won't argue with me about it.
Right.
My job is not to convince anyone of anything. My job is to work with people who already know it's true because they're dealing with it. That's all I see my work as. I'm not out there to change anybody's mind. And I don't blame them for not changing their mind and for having every skeptical question they can ask. I think they should. But once it's happening, then you can talk to me and we'll go from there, you know? So.
All the women on the chart in the back, which I actually found very informative, it's a wonderful way to get thoughts going.
Yeah, I thought it helped me too, you know.
All the women on there had psychic experience of one sort or another listed. And was it, did they have these, I was going to say before or after their abduction experience.
But there is no such thing as before or after if it starts in early childhood. It's before or after knowing you've had it. Before consciousness of it. I put some of those questions on the questionnaire and therefore on the chart. They ended up on the chart because certain people in the field have raised certain points. Oh, we think it's Celtic blood. Oh, we think it's Native American. Oh, we think it's only people who the military can get through the intelligence group. Oh, we think it's child abuse victims. Oh, we think it's psychic. I personally have no reason to doubt that everybody has a psychic gift.
Not developed in some
people. Yeah, I mean, that may just be given. It's like, yes, did they all have blood? Yes, amazingly, every one of the abductees had blood. You know, some things are so irrelevant that people want to hold on to as relevant that I just, you know, I don't see that may well be.
You're going to run into that problem with me, I think, during these questions.
Well, that's okay.
You said something about, you just mentioned the Celtic ancestry. I noticed all of the women except one had Celtic ancestry listed. And,
which is not surprising in the American population if you know our history. China, they don't.
Right.
South Africa, they don't. Not that much.
Generally the same things happen in Africa, South Africa, and China.
We forget we're living in a place that has a certain cultural heritage, and it's not global. But Americans tend to be real provincial, and so we got 90% of the people we've worked with have Celtic blood. My God, that must be it.
Yeah, it must be.
Well, they're not working in the Sahara. You know, they're not working in Tierra del Fuego. You know, they forget.
Right.
They don't have the people who watch TV or something.
Right.
So one of the women in your, I guess you all use pseudonyms.
Actually, most of them use their real first names. What I consider a pseudonym because I didn't identify them by last name.
Right.
Make it specific.
Oh, she described that Phoenix Vulture type dream with the imagery of God and all that. I'm sorry you didn't have the last issue of our magazine because we talked to an ophthalmologist who had a near-death experience. I'll give it to you on here. And part of what he talked about was in in the 50s, there was this doctor in Canada called Wilder Penfield, I think, and he was operating on epilepsy patients, and the only way to cure them really was to go in and fry the area of their brain electrically that was causing the seizures. But in the midst of that, he went through with a much smaller electrical current, went across areas of their brain, taking, this brings up something with you actually, stimulating areas of their brain and asking them what they were seeing, what they were experiencing. And one part of the brain, people would get images of, depending on, a lot of the times, on their ancestry, on their back religious background, would see Blessed Virgin Mary, would see saints, would see, except it was mostly French Canadians and they were Catholics.
Yeah.
And that came to mind when you were talking about Lisa's dream about that.
Well, Lisa knows, as I do, that most of what she goes through on the frequent basis. Now, there are things that are physical, there's no doubt, like when she almost broke her back when she was being zapped out of the bed. I mean, like the doctor said, my God, have you been parachuting? I've never seen this except a parachuting accident. Parachuting up out of the bed, yeah.
Wrong way.
But she knows that the virtual reality capabilities, and we don't know how the implant, what role they may be, all the role, maybe none of the role, maybe part of the role in there. We know enough about the fact that they have technology that can do this, that she knows they're screwing with her head mentally. She's not really seeing vultures and eagles. She's not really seeing this or that. Half the things they do on all, we have to almost automatically assume they're pulling this stuff for whatever programming or...
And not just that little area where you see religious imagery, but your entire brain.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I find no problem with that. I'm not saying how they're doing it. I'm just saying they're doing it. I'm not going to quibble over if they're stimulating this part of the cortex or if they're
doing it
through an implant or if they're beaming something at you from a machine. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The effect is what I'm dealing with. People on the end of this, receiving end of this. And I'm not a technician. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a therapist.
Oh, I was talking to you on the phone. This is a question that you just answered in there about the woman in the bed with the VRS while she with the blue.
Right.
Which led to another question: how can whoever is doing this to people, be they agents of the government or alien service, or how do they keep from getting people walking in on them or seeing them from a distance?
They don't always. They don't know it. Well, case with Ted Marie Francis.
Uh-huh.
Linda Cortile, if it's a real case, I don't know. I haven't investigated.
Right.
Several people I have worked with, some I've reported on in the book, and you may just say, this is so trivial, you might not pay attention. Others that a lot more I haven't reported on. Neighbors have seen craft over the house the night the person has something happen and they didn't see the craft but the neighbors did, or you know, those sort of thing. We get inadvertent witnesses to some evidence that seems linked to this. Occasionally, maybe the Cortile thing, maybe the thing with Ted Francis and Marie was a very close up witness in inadvertent event. For all I know, maybe they do it on purpose. We still don't know the agenda. We don't know the program.
You know, it's funny when you said about the ceiling opening up. I talked to a friend of mine in Los Angeles, and she has a friend that he said ever since he was a little kid, every once in a while the ceiling in his room would open up, things would come down out of the ceiling and talk to him. And she said he doesn't want to talk to anybody about it, but I thought you might be interested. So, I mean, that doesn't leave me anywhere. I can't talk to the guy.
Well, if you're interested in talking with a lot of abduction research people, you'll find over and over and over again the walls dissolved and they came through, the ceiling disappeared and they came through. If nobody's watching, we don't know if the ceiling's disappearing, they're going through, if they're having one of these little scenarios going on. We just don't know. We, you know, and you can try. People have tried monitoring themselves with cameras. They've tried, you know, sitting up all night to watch somebody else. It's cool. We're going to have to do better than that or we're not going to catch it. And I can't tell you what to do that's better than that. There's people out there a lot smarter than I am who should be working on this.
Mm-hmm. Anything we can catch, we don't think
they're physical. I think they're physical and finite and fallible, given what I've seen from first-hand experience.
In what way? Besides another, one example that we just talked about.
Yeah, flipping up on this, flipping up on that. Well, I think there is hope. I think that one of the biggest deceptions they perpetrate on us is that we can't do anything about it. If we couldn't do anything about it, it wouldn't be paralyzing and repressing.
We wouldn't be talking right now.
Right.
We wouldn't be hiding it.
Right. And you read the last, very last page or two of Taken. You know I do have an optimistic potential theory. Mm-hmm. I've got to have something.
No. Or you wouldn't be here.
That's right. I just don't feel as hopeless. I feel, in fact, I've felt for the last year or so a growing sense of certainty and joy and something inside that we're getting there. We're going to get there. We're not boring in vain.
Uh-huh.
But then people say, oh, you're just getting a religion. I'm like, well, you know, people know me. I'm not that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a feeling that's grown stronger as I go through.
It's optimistic.
Yeah. Right.
It's based on experience, too.
It's based, and also having learned, one thing that this has taught me is to pay more attention to my gut. I don't know right brain and left brain what those things mean. I know one means one thing, one means the other, but it's not my bag. But I've been more given to scrutiny of an intellectual sort than an intuitive, oh, my gut says, do it. Well, I'm learning to listen a whole lot more in the last few years to that instinctive thing, and that's a growth that I think has been part of my necessity to learn how to cope and survive better with this.
Man, you
know, I think I've worked it up.
Great. How about you, Sam? I'm still on it. Thank you.
So, maybe that's part of what we're going to have to get even stronger at doing is combining them. I called it tricameralism just in a, very symbolic sense. I'm not talking literally growing a new lobe. Although, I don't rule anything out.
Right.
But you know what I'm talking about, perceptively.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that may be learning to get that up more to a conscious surface so we can really manipulate it. Most people who have psychic gifts or have psychic flashes or stuff can't control it.
Yeah.
It comes. We're going to have to get to a point of controlling some of our better
perception. Well, that's the goal of mystical practices and specifically Western occultism for the last maybe 1,000 years.
But it may be it's not.
And before then, in a different form.
You know, it may well be that it's going to take the kind of intense stress we're seeing under this thing before it really kicks in. Desire may not be enough. Practice certainly has not been for a lot of people.
You said they were coming in to control people and put them back in line, but it seems like it's helping people to evolve beyond trying to.
Remember that double-edged sword I talked about that kicked us into enough intelligence to take care of the farm, didn't mean it to go any further, and it's still going. You know, I see this as a highly ironic possibility.
I think it could go even beyond that. It could be like a double blind where it's kind of the tough mothering or tough fathering thing where they are forcing us to evolve.
No, I don't. I think that's really, really stretching it. I think it's a desperate desire on the part of those really good hearts who don't want there to be devils.
Right.
You know? And I'm not saying they're devils. Like I said, I think they're physical and finite and fallible. But, there are some people who are so evil in their actions, they feel like devils, but they're still born of a mother and a father. So I'm just using that metaphorically. So you'll say, I believe in devils or something. But no, I think in fact, that's the only probably real criticism I have of Valet's thinking is that he will go from here to Waco to San Antonio to Brownsville to here to avoid the straight line that logic and evidence most points to because he doesn't like what's on the other end of that line. And he will go to absurd, illogical lengths of reasoning to avoid something that he finds, personally not.
John Keel does that too.
Oh, John Keel makes up stuff. I've checked the often against
that. But yet he criticized in one of his articles, a little fanzine, I guess, Ollie and me, that don't check their references and things of that
nature. Well, I spent a lot of money and time checking out one story. Now, some of the stuff I've checked out obscurely is there, and I used to check a lot of stuff that I was interested in, and I find these things, they're really there. But one story that he just totally, it was so easily obvious to check it. See, Bruce Birkin in Asbury Park, New Jersey, I happen to be a Springsteen person. I go to Asbury Park. I used to go a lot. This story said talked about this guy named Bruce Birkin who was abducted right off of the shore there probably not two blocks from the Stone Pony. Missing for 2 months. They put out flyers and mentioned searches. They finally held a memorial service for the guy in Bammy's back. 2 months later, doesn't know where he's been. Described the guy physically. Gave the date. It did not happen. Okay? I checked everything from the police to the papers to the morgue to the everything. Funeral home. Not even somebody with a different name. It didn't happen.
Right.
So that sort of bothered me. You know, I like Kiel's work. I enjoy reading it. But
as
far as what you
want
to base your life on, I'd be careful.
I like his ideas.
And the one thing I love about him is that nobody did say God had to be sane. You know, I think that's important to remember.
Well, one thing Valet said, which I always thought was very fun, was just because a message comes from God doesn't mean it isn't stupid.
Yeah.
God has bad days, too.
Yeah, bad hair days. We were talking about dreams a little bit ago, and you say a lot of the people you've dealt with, including you, have that night of lights, numerous UFOs coming through dreams.
Yeah.
I was wondering what made that special, because I've had that dream more than a few times. A friend of mine, Peter, actually, I think he's got suspicions. Not suspicions, he's pretty sure that he's had experiences, like abduction experiences.
Well, I think
my friend Robert, he has the same.
Have you had it?
That one, no.
In different scenarios, I've had the same dream a couple of times.
I've had it probably twice, I guess, over the same day. In different scenarios, right? But essentially,
one involved my whole family. It was kind of interesting.
I love the one. One of the ones my son had when we were all freaking out because it was, you know, it was happening. Coming out, and he said he remembered that we called out for pizza because we were too excited to cook, and the pizza guy came, and he said, "Did you see the headlines? Aliens land." You know, mine are never that nice. Mine are always, oh my God, what are we going to do? But I don't know the scenario behind it. It may be part of the master program. It may be part of the movie, the trailer, or the cartoon of the movie we get shown. But it's just there. It's very, very, very common there. So either we're generating it as a natural human response to this kind of stuff, or it's part of the process to make us get to the point of thinking, you know, there's nothing we can do when it comes. Get people where they don't think they can do anything, they'll try. Are part of setting us up that, you know, there's this great destruction coming and we're coming to save you, be welcoming in us, you know. And I so mistrust them that I can see any number of motives that
I would. It's very easy, especially now. Everybody is so, a lot of people are very scared of everything, almost willing to give up their, can you take care of it for me because it's too much for me to handle.
You're very much our cattle.
Right.
Even without any alien intervention.
Exactly, and these guys know us real well. They know what buttons to push. And I tell you what, I don't have any fear of them. I mean, that sounds stupid, like I'm saying I'm so brave, but I've had chances to know now. I don't have any fear of them. People say, oh, you're so angry, you're so this, and you're so that. And I said, hey, anybody breaking in my house, I'm not going to be nice to. I think I'm a decent, normal person.
Yeah.
It ought to be grounds anywhere.
Amy had either a virtual reality scenario or a dream in childhood. You said it was designed to destroy her faith in traditional religion.
Yeah, this was not a dream. This was she was during the day and she'd been running back past the church.
You didn't describe what it was, though.
I know. You know why my book doesn't have a lot of the things I want to put in it? We started the company to publish this book. We had a limited amount of money, and if we had gone one more page, the price would have gone up $400.
I'm in publishing, so I
you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would have loved to answer many, many questions, but I don't have to find our backer or a publisher.
Well, I'll publish it. What did happen?
Amy's here.
Oh, is she?
Three of the women are here.
Oh, that's great.
And if she would agree to let you have the story, you could get it straight from her instead of me garbling through a secondhand account.
That'd be great.
I'll talk to them this afternoon and see if I can run them all down. This is the first time they had met in the flesh. Mm-hmm. The women are all over the country, and we have a group letter. They wanted to do a group letter to stay in touch with each other, but slowly but surely people are beginning to meet each other and bonds form on, you know, specific things with each other. So it's been a real good experience for all of us, and this is our first chance to have Amy and Anita and Jane all together, the three Texas ladies. She can tell you about it. It was a scenario in the church where they did something where the statues, the holy statues did movements are changed or did something to the child, right? And they showed her the church burning down and one of those visions when she was driving by there. And she thought it was so real that she, you know, jumped off her bike and ran to the parish door to, you know, come get this. The church is on fire.
Yeah.
Of course, the church wasn't on fire at all. And they told her mentally that this was all, you know, pretty much a sham. That there really wasn't a joke in the real
world. What do you think the purpose behind that was? Just so there'd be nothing for her to hold on to? Or?
Well, you
so you could look at it in a few different ways.
Right. Maybe it was the truth. Maybe it was part of changing her thinking to a more malleable form for whatever they want to use it for. I don't know. I mean, God, I'd love to know. I just don't think it was for necessarily her good. I don't see the evidence of that. So I'm going to be suspicious until I know otherwise. Can I ask a favor by chance?
Sure.
We'll get him to put this in a disposable. Can we go outside and let me have smoke?
Yeah, no problem. No, I don't.
Ladder
back. Oh, okay. Oh, you know what? This isn't on the list, but when you were saying about the guy who had run out and seen that woman standing there and wanting to embrace him and all that, why would they change? Was that James, really?
I sent him to the friend.
Oh, is it?
You
maybe I didn't.
So much.
Why would they change it right in the middle to just for the mere fact of terrifying
you? Ever heard of the emotional vampire?
I know what you're talking about. In fact, I've got a book here that I wanted you to take with you and either keep or send back to me when you're done with it. Or I can see you later, and Wesley and I can make a copy of it before the end of the convention. You can get a copy. I'll show it to you later.
Part of this, at least some of these things, I would put in that category, that a lot of what we go through, including virtual reality stuff, a lot of what Lisa and many other people are put through, I think it's designed to elicit emotions that are literally harvesting energies of a certain sort. And when I put out the next book, the one I've already written before I wrote this one, but the man we're putting it out co-authored, it's his life and I wrote it.
Right.
He wanted to first try to get a mainstream publisher. I said, fine, you go ahead and try. You know, take a year. Get the response you're going to get, and then we'll put the book out. We're fixing to probably put the book out. There's some things in there you're just going to, really have a lot of questions about, but I think it's going to be one of the biggest eye-openers people can have a chance to look at, and it should, if people would be honest and responded on the chisel of the lid off the image, and the spirit, and the
psychic.
It is a bona fide, practicing, one of the few I've ever seen do stuff psychic guy, and this guy, Ted Wright, he thought he was trained. He went through a whole series of things. You have to record this right now. He went through a whole series of things in his life that set him up to be trained for the psychic stuff. And he finally got trained. He went to Casadega. He passed the flying colors, you know, the exams. He was certified. He was one of the co-founders of the Spiritualist Church in Georgia. Heavily involved in this. He has done some psychic stuff. For me, I mean, I'm a skeptic. This guy just freaks me out sometimes. He really is. He's so down to earth. He's the funniest guy. He ought to have his own talk show. He's hilarious. But he thought he was being dealt with by spirits after he moved to Shreveport. And he thought this was more of a spirit. That's the thing. We've seen this shit they've never done before, man. They wasn't at night. They were touching his body. They were giving all his trauma. He wasn't sleeping well. He was having to go to bed. He was just exhausting himself emotionally and physically. And finally, and it always started with the full blue light coming in the house. See, the spirit's never done that before. Oh, he'd had some other things, but he didn't know what they were. So finally, he saw it coming in. He just lost his temper. He's an Alabama boy, okay? He's finally had enough. He's on the edge of breaking with no more
risk. Have a seat now if you want.
Yeah, let's get it. He finally is back. He saw the blue light in a little profile. And he just blew up and he started cussing the spirit. That you people have been training me, or you have been training me all these years to go out and do this spiritual work, to spread the word, and people about the other side and the new dimensions, and then you want me to do all this, but you're keeping me up night after night. I'm not getting, how can I do my work? You don't give me any rest. For God's sake, leave me alone. Go pick on the neighbors for a change. 4 months later, they abducted everybody on his street, including him, got them all on the ship, and said, is this what you had in mind? This is the first time he saw aliens, and he saw the ship, and within a week, this is in a trailer park. He had just moved to Shreveport. He had a trailer out in Albuquerque for him. Within a week, all but two of the trailers had for sale signs in the yard. He had just moved onto this street like 4 days before. So that night he moved in, then he saw the little light, and he blew up, did all this. And he hadn't even gotten to know the neighbors. He was so busy at the new job in Shreveport.
and all this stuff, and it was several months before he really got to know who he was. Only two people were left that had been there. And he told his son, who was with him at the time, about this weird, weird dream he had had. You know, he thought it had to be a dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that don't happen.
Yeah.
Well, finally he got to know one of the families that was still there. It was a young family with two little kids, and they were out chatting on the patio one night. His son was there. This was months later, 8 or 9 months later. And it was Wednesday night. Unsolved Mysteries had just announced, they said, come on, they were having a UFO thing. And so they kicked his son, yelled at the door, hey, Ted, they're fixing to do something on UFOs. Remember that dream he had? You want to come see this?
Uh-huh.
Ted said, yeah. And he said, excuse me, I want to go watch this. And they said, well, hey, you know, we're sort of interested now. Can we come watch it with you? And they said, yeah, came in, started watching. The two little kids are still outside playing. And the mom, after it was over, said, son said, you know, it sort of sounds like what my daughter told me about that happened a while back.
This was one of the neighbors that was in. Okay.
The 5-year-old daughter had told her folks the next day that during the night, some little spacemen had come in and taken her out to a big rocket in the exact spot where Ted had seen the UFO. And that they had gone for a ride, and that there were a whole bunch of other people from the neighborhood there. And she said, and when he heard this, he had her come in and tell him himself. And she said, and you were there too. She didn't even know him at that time. Furthermore, a cousin had been visiting there that when this happened. And the next morning, when he woke up, he had been sleeping on the couch in the living room, just visiting. He asked this young his sister, what in the hell were all those little kids doing in the house last night? Where's that blue? And now this is when Ted started looking for help. That's how we, you know, finally got together. So this is just one little thing in the story that I cannot wait for this book to get out, because it's going to flip.
That's an incredible story. I mean, that's,
yeah.
I mean, when people ask for some kind of objective confirmation, unless they reject the entire story outright,
well,
what can you say to it?
That's right. That's right. And I have interviewed, I mean, his is the most confirmed life case history I have ever worked on. I've got affidavits from everybody involved with him from the beginning, and some of them are doctors, some of them are, you know, highly respected people in various professions, and the stories are so consistent and so full. This case, if I had no one, I'd stake things on. Okay. I just wanted to mention that.
No, I liked hearing about it.
Okay.
Okay. Actually, when we were here earlier, when we were out here earlier, somebody, I always wondered this too, but one of our friends was like, well, how come nobody's ever retrieved an implant? And I said, I mean, I know that some people have, but I've never seen any.
Daryl's got some in there if you want to see him now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you know Daryl's in?
Photos or?
No, implants. Yeah. But nobody.
I was going to ask what's like, if I can see them.
I've seen them on x-ray. I've got some, one on a man's hip, the little thing, the little metallic thing with the wires coming out the end that his chiropractor found when he did the x-rays. I've seen MRIs of them in the back of this one. Yeah, but and people have, you know, Hopkins and Jacobs have all talked that we've got some recovered and we're having them tested at MRI. You never hear, have you ever heard the results?
No.
That's because they didn't find out anything.
But then again, that could be misdirection.
Or it could be that we're not going to find out anything from, when we don't have the technology that's proper to test this stuff, how can we find out? Sorry, Greg.
That's okay. You are free to talk as long as you want. That's why I like to do this. That's the way I like to do these. You say there's abduction over the past 40 or 50 years, at least, that you're referring to. And what or how many do you know besides the one that's come out after the fact? In modern research, what I'm saying is, how come nobody said anything about it 40 or 50 years ago? If there were so many of them, you figure there's at least one or two people that would say something.
Well, there were. For instance, my husband's grandmother did, as a child, had an abduction and missing time with a screen memory.
You know what it was? Maybe it's just it's a dream, honey.
No, she was awake. It was during the day.
Yeah.
She was about 5, 6, 7 years old, and they lived in East Texas, and there was a swampy area near there that they knew never to go into, but this beautiful, mysterious, strange little butterfly led her off into the swamp, where she had a couple hours of missing time before this beautiful, nice lady let her back out. This was reported as a child in the early 1900s. You know, what did they think about it? Angels? You know, I mean, people have context they can explain things in. There have been things reported. I think the reason perhaps a lot of this may have been going on and not reported is the same reason a lot of it's gone on in all of our lives that have had this happen since childhood, and we didn't remember it till a certain point.
you know, there's either a timing mechanism that goes off only at a certain time, or we're slowly in the species changing state where we're beginning to get the perception to see these things that before we weren't seeing. You and I still can't see x-rays. They're there, we just can't see them. But if we learn, if we develop a new ocular perception, we might see them.
Right.
So that's my hypothetical answer to that, Greg. Go ahead and give it.
Do you think it's possible, too, that with the current interest in it, publicity gets out there, perhaps it's triggering?
More and more people are getting in context in which to think about these things.
Right.
Have you seen a book called Visions, Apparitions, and Alien Visitors by Hillary Evans?
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd like that one very much. One chapter is UFO stuff. The rest of it is anomalous experience, people with visitations from fairies and elves, and one has a picture of this woman figure, and she's got long, you know, kind of curly hair down to here, and big alien eyes that this girl said she saw in her room when she was a child for a long time. And he goes through religious visions, all this stuff, and he tries to make kind of a unified field theory out of it. It's a very good book.
I'll tell you something you might be interested in for the magazine at some point in the future is my non-alien experiences, because there's a whole bunch of people in this field who have non-alien weirdo stuff going on, too.
I'm very interested in that. Blessed, too.
Yeah, maybe so. I'll have a look.
That's why I joined on that. We get lots of shamanism, psychedelics, scare off most of the UFOs.
Well, I had a thing with a hippie-looking Jesus when I was 22 years old. That's extraordinary. I had a thing when I was planning to go to India to marry the man I was married to before I was married to my husband. A month before I left, at 4 in the morning, I was sitting on bed. My kid had been up with pneumonia all night, and I had to hold him upright so he could breathe, and he finally got calm enough to put him down. And I knew I had to be a bit sick. So I sit down on my bed, which was in the living room, which is a one-bedroom apartment, at 4, and I thought, do I even go to bed for 2 hours, or is it just better to stay up? And there was a knock at my door. I answered the door, and there was a guy in his 20s standing there. It looked totally normal, had on wheat jeans and a mad plaid shirt and glasses, and his name was Jim, and he came to take me to India. And I went. And we went. I mean, this is like a 3-4 day thing. We went to Dallas. We flew to India, the long trip. We got there. We got in a Jeep. We landed in this town in the south. Got in a Jeep. We drove about a while in this weird, weird environment. I mean, it looked like something I'd never seen before. To this big, big, big village. And he took me to this house, took me in, showed me how everything in this house worked. And it's nothing like here, believe me. I mean, there were little mouse holes cut in the floor, in the wall of each of the outer walls in each room. There was, I mean, the whole kitchen was this piece of stovepipe with a ring on the top with wicks in it, and how to operate all this stuff.
Where was this?
This is in India.
Oh, okay.
He took me to India, showed me all this stuff. He took me down, showed me where I had to go down these steps into this well that was sunk in the ground to get the water, had to boil it, all this sort of crap. He showed me, brought me back, flew me back, next thing I'm ever going back to town, living and mixing it on. I'm sitting on my bed and it's 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'm saying, shit, boy, I had the weirdest dream in the world sitting up here for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Told all my friends about it. This is in December. I was scheduled to fly to India in January.
Huh.
January 10th, I get on the plane, fly to India, get off in this town in the south where I'm supposed to meet my fiance, and he ain't there. I've got a 4-year-old kid with me, and nobody. And it took 12 hours to find another American who knew where the Peace Corps people hung out. The guy was in Peace Corps. And I finally got there, found a guy who knew my fiancé. He knew the town he lived in, but didn't know where. And he said, I don't know where he is. And I said, well, look, until he turns up, why don't I just take you to my house?
And guess which house it was.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. So we go out and get in a Jeep.
Yeah.
Load up my kids in my bags, and we start driving out, and I'm just getting the chills because here's this weird environment. It's like something on the moon. This is the Deccan Plateau, which is a lot of granite. I mean, it's real strange. I've never seen it before. We start driving. We drive about an hour, and then he says, there's the town over there. We're fixing to go through the edge of it where your fiance lives. I don't know where. We're going on through to my town. I said, wait a minute. Turn off. And I take him through this town to my house, which is padlocked, and there's nobody there. And I said, break that lock. This is my house. He said, you're crazy. I ain't breaking in a house. This is my house. And he said, you've been here before? I said, no. Finally got somebody in the neighborhood to break the lock. Went inside, and there were pictures of me in the house. And it was exactly what I'd been shown. A little mouse hole, a little thing, everything. My fiancé didn't turn up for 5 days. He had missed my last telegram saying, I'm not going to Bombay, I'm flying on down to Bangalore. He was up in Bombay for 5 days. So I was there with a kid, 4-year-old kid, for 5 days. And if I had not been taken the month before and shown how to do all this stuff, I don't know how we would have been.
Huh.
I mean, stuff like that. You know, I mean, people...
You don't know whether to call it precognitive or...
I have not a clue what to call it. You know, it just it happened. There's things like that that have happened that I don't think are alien-related, but who knows what this stuff is. It's just we have other stories than just abductions.
I find that with abductees. They always, it's not just UFO stuff. It's always other stuff.
There's at least three or four other things like that that I don't know what to make of, but they happen, and I told people when they happen.
My friend Peter chooses to look at it as his creative mind doing things because he's an artist.
Whatever it is,
that's the one that makes him happiest.
Yeah, whatever it is, I can't tell you otherwise. But
can you turn? Can you turn
that thing that I called a grasshopper when I was a kid, later I saw a praying mantis, and that's what it really looked like. I just hadn't seen one at the time this thing happened to me. All I knew, close thing I could say was grasshopper. Yeah. Oh, yeah, mantis things turn
You said that a lot of people, that they change their spiritual beliefs and agendas and all that, and does it seem to be in some certain direction, or mostly more non-dogmatic, or what would you say?
Much more non-dogmatic. Part of the EP programming I didn't get to talk about was this great emphasis they put on. They give you training sessions and teaching sessions and all sorts of things about you've got to be less attached to that body. It's just a container. It's not the thing. Of course, if they're taking it and using it for their own purposes, they don't want you attached to it. You know, I mean, a lot of that. There are a lot of, I'm just in a container becomes a lot of the spiritual thrust of their thinking after these experiences.
That seems like the way you describe it, seems like a very opportunistic thing to say.
I think it is.
Not very, but all it is.
I really do think so. But that's, I mean, there's so many things I didn't have time to talk about. Yeah, I think it moves toward detaching us from our physical existence, devaluating our physical existence. And personally, I don't think God screwed up and gave us the wrong existence. I think that's pretty blasphemous, but it's one of the directions it pushes people towards.
Yeah, well, you must be incarnated, otherwise you can't learn. When you're in their little box or whatever you call it, that's not, you can't learn a thing.
Well, I'm one of those really stupid people who have never seen the earth as a school, a trial, a prison, a test, or anything. I think it is in and of itself a worthwhile and relevant thing we should be doing, and we're doing it because we should be doing it, not because we're being punished or being trained. I just don't buy that.
Okay, I had some other things, but they've mostly been answered, you know, from all our conversations. The last thing I want to ask you is, and it may have everything to do with what we were talking about, and I'll just read the question. Trying to assault the abduction field with logic doesn't seem to help. There's just too many factors, and once you nail down one or two aspects of it, much more is left unaddressed. And you know what? You did answer. So have you been able to form any scenario that would put your experiences into some kind of coherence?
Yeah, my husband and I sat up one night real late and said, let's throw out all the things we'd like it to be. Let's throw out all the theories that we know have holes in them. What theory could we come up with that would be unified, that would bring all of this into a meaning? And we did come up with a theory nobody's ever talked about. And I've never talked about it publicly because it's just what we created to explain things. You know, and it would have to do with these creatures being strictly Earth creatures. And if you take the history of the planet back as far as we know it goes with our limited perception, the first life forms to really arise into any dominance were probably insectoid. And if that survived long enough to give rise to an intelligent insectoid race, and then there was cataclysmic, as the Earth does go through cataclysmic change, and these beings had reached a point of enough intelligence to be able to maybe dimension jump or get off planet or whatever in some way to survive it.
Or even project themselves physically in some way.
Until things settle back down, and then they were able to, they're Earth creatures by origin, and they're Earth creatures in need of nutrients, they would come back and start again on this planet. Life begins to evolve its next level of stuff, and the next major group that takes precedent on the planet is reptilian, and again we have this thing go on, so we get an intelligent reptoid life, again we get a cataclysmic thing, again we get a survival until things settle back down, and then of course we get the mammalians, and we get to be the ones that these could very well be strictly of the earth, who have reached through eons of intelligence and evolution their own abilities, either technologically or not, to do the things that they do, and we are their source of food because they're of this planet. That's the only theory we could come up with that explains
everything. They're
looking
everything. At you as interlopers. We've been here longer.
As they're right to feed on us,
right.
The way we feed on things here. And they may well be to the point where they, some of them don't have to ingest nutrients. They can take it from the sun, or they can take it from energy, or you know, whatever. We don't know what the possibilities are. We think we're the only intelligent species to ever come up on this planet because we don't find the insectoid city remnants or whatever. Uh-huh. You get enough cataclysm going, you ain't going to find anything.
Right.
So that was the only theory we could hypothesize to me explaining everything I know about the phenomenon. Nobody ever talks about it, and I don't either. It's just, it was play.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm open, I'm really still very open, but that one did seem to have some possibilities.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was my dream thing.